Thank you. This is being conducted via video conferencing. Members of the public are watching us via listen-only video feed. I think it means they can see us and hear us, but they can't participate. It's not they can only listen. As a reminder, if you need to view material to the public, we are all have different technology setups. For instance, I only have one screen, and so from time to time I'm gonna have to switch screens or look in different places. So sometimes I may be facing away from you, from the public. Sometimes I may be down. I'm not checking my email or anything, but I only have one screen in my office. To the budget committee members and anybody presenting today or talking today, and has a live mic, please make sure you are muted unless you are speaking, and then unmute yourself just prior to speaking. And I know we have staff will be trying to mute and unmute everybody as we go along. But also, when you unmute to speak, could you please state your name? I know we have our names on our images, except some people are listening and can't see it. And so it would be helpful if you could state your name as well. All right, with that, Ms. Cowan, if you would take roll.
Judge Rubin.
I am here.
Judge Mormon.
Present.
Judge Botke.
I'm here.
Justice Fujisaki.
Here.
Justice Hill.
Here.
Judge Hopp.
Here.
Mr. Harrigan.
I'm here.
Thank you. All members are present.
So just one technical issue. I see we have an IT advisor. Judge Mormon is very loud. And I'm wondering, is that her microphone or on our end? I mean,
it would be on her end.
Oh, her end.
Well,
okay.
One of the problems is that, sorry, I will back away and speak very little, is I can't hear anybody.
Oh.
I turn it down. I'll try it again. My apologies.
Sorry about that. All right. Ms. Cowan, have we received any public comment for today's meeting?
There's no public comment.
All right, that does conclude the public comment portion of this meeting. So our first item is, and for those of you who are listening and may not have been to one of our meetings before, for those of you who may not have been, let me just say one thing. The Budget Committee is unique in that we are always running on multiple tracks in terms of years, budget years. So while we're today going to be dealing with an allocation for budget year 2021, currently budget negotiations are ongoing for 21-22, and our budget committee has already started 22-23. So this is always happening, and in kind of the spirit of that, we've asked Mr. Theodorovic to come in and tell us a little bit about the 21-22 budget update to the extent that he can, understanding we don't expect the budget for 21-22 to appear until the end of the week. But maybe, Mr. Theodorovic, you could share with us what insights you can.
Yeah, thank you, Judge Rubin, and happy new year to all. Really appreciate the few moments just to touch bases with you. The governor has indicated that Friday will be the release of the budget. By constitution, the governor is required to release it no later than January 10th, and it being that being a Sunday, it is typical that it is on the Friday prior. We have been tracking, the sort of the communications from the Department of Finance about the budget building process, obviously, and there's still a lot of, caution and concern about what COVID is doing to the economy in a longer term basis. In the short term, though, revenues have been coming in higher than forecast at the Budget Act in June. And I wouldn't say that that's either expected or unexpected. It's just at the time they were uncertain and making their best estimates, but revenues are better. So that's obviously better for us in terms of the situation and circumstances under which the governor is building the budget. But we do need to see what they think will be the out year, the budget year forecasted revenues, where our expenditures otherwise as it relates to caseload, population, and then obviously COVID reaction costs. Those will be continuing, we expect. So, you know, we are looking forward to, you know, a budget release on Friday. We will hopefully be having, you know, we do have our phone call at noon for those of you who are hopefully able to join and can hear that. But in the event that you're not able to, feel free to email me or John, and we can definitely get back to you on any questions you have, or even pick up the phone and just give you a quick update. But we think it is important that if you're able to join that call so we can go over the details of the budget. Again, being built with some better revenues, but still you know, cautious about the future, as we do not know what the long-term impacts of the business closures will be on our state revenues. Markets are still positive and well above the end of last year, and so there might be some opportunities for some capital gains. But are those one time? And if they are one time, then the focus of the administration again will likely be on one-time investment and not committing to ongoing expenditures. So really, that's the quick update I wanted to provide. Again, if you can make the call on Friday, that would be great. If not, then we are here to answer questions that you have. You can be as prepared as possible as we go through the spring and deliberate on our 22-23 budget concepts that all the committees and the Judicial Council staff are pulling together to come your way in March. So, if there are any questions, I'm more than happy to take them.
Any questions for Mr. Theodorovic? And remember, I can see you, so if you raise your hands like we're in a regular meeting, I can call on you. I guess I have a question.
Yes.
So obviously, some of us were talking a little bit before we started the meeting about articles that are appearing on vaccine rollout, and obviously the vaccine is now rolling out, and that's going to change the situation next year to some extent. I was just wondering if and how do they anticipate that changing the economic picture, or do they, or they're just, it's just too up in the air, they can't tell.
Yeah, judges, I think that's what we're waiting for to hear on Friday. You know, we've heard about a $2 billion investment in education that involves, you know, COVID response and getting schools back up and running. But honestly, I would say is that we need to wait until Friday to see what they think the availability of the vaccine will have on businesses and the economy at large.
Okay, that makes sense. Any other questions for Mr. Theodorovic? All right, seeing none, I'm going to write it off to it's the first meeting of the year. I went by the minutes without asking for a motion. So has everyone had a chance to look at our motion, our minutes from our last meeting on November 12th? Can you all hear me?
Yes, move to approve. This is Judge Bakke.
All right, Bakke moves to approve. For a second?
Second, Judge.
I'll second.
All right, Hoff seconds. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Aye, abstain.
Right.
Justice Fujisaki.
Right, I was asked if Justice Fujisaki wanted to abstain because she was. All right. Great, that motion passes. Now, let's go on to our next item, which will be the balance of our meeting. And that is going to be returning to our COVID-19 backlog funding recommendation to the council. We are on for our January meeting. So this will be our last opportunity to look at before that comes up, meeting in about an hour and a half. So for those of you who are listening, I just thought I would, and maybe not is aware of this, I thought I'd kind of review just a little bit of history and then kind of set a context, and I'm going to open it up to staff and to others to chat about it before we have our discussion. And I wanted to start first, before I did that, by thanking the court research staff, Rob O'Young and his folks. I wanted to thank our budget committee staff. They've all worked so incredibly hard on getting this ready for us. by today. It was kind of impressive. Special thanks to all the CEOs and all the PJs around the state. You know, we gave them a deadline of December 15th to get all the data in that was needed, and they did it. So I just think that they need to be recognized for all the very hard work that they did. As this branch moves into the 21st century, it will become more data-driven or data-informed. This will be kind of a good kind of template for moving forward, and we just really appreciate all the hard work. And you've seen all the displays and the reports, and you can imagine just how much effort went into it. I'd be remiss if I didn't thank Judge Conklin, Mr. Chatters, and Ms. Flenner, who were very patient with me and others as I asked questions and help just kind of help frame up today's meeting. And they're very generous with their time and their efforts on behalf of the branch and also on behalf of this committee. They need to be thanked for that. So I want to start with that. So let's kind of go back a little bit again for those, just give a quick history, although maybe too late to call it quick. You'll recall that coming out of the budget discussions at the end of last year's budget season, there was a $50 million one-time funding appropriation from the governor and the legislature to help address COVID backlogs. And at the first meeting of the fiscal year of the council back in July of 2020, there was a kickback, as it does every year, came with kind of a funding recommendation and had multiple pieces, but one of the pieces had to do with the $50 million of the one-time COVID money. And what we did at that meeting was the council took the position of there, at that point, remember we were 4 months into the COVID-19. We had been told there was going to be waves of it. We'd be coming out of the first wave by mid-July. That clearly was not happening. Ports were really severely impacted. And so the council took a really good, clear policy position of saying, we're going to take the first half of that money, the $25 million, and distribute it on a pro rata model, consistent with what Take Back had recommended for the entire $50 million. And the balance of it, the other $25 million, was going to be handled differently. And if you recall, there was like a four-part motion. And the motion said, one, $25 million goes out, is allocated as of July 2020. The second part was that TICBAC was going to develop clear and precise definitions and practices for documenting and reporting backlogs related to COVID-19, and then report those recommendations to the council before the second $25 million went out. So that's part two of the motion. The third thing that was going to happen was TICBAC was going to gather data on the spending of the first $25 million and then report that back to the council as well before the second $25 million went out. And finally, in consultation with the Judicial Branch Budget Committee, they were going to develop a recommendation for allocating the second $25 million. And then TICBAC would be reporting to the council about that. Now, so obviously we've done the first part. Now, there have TICBAC, and I'll let Judge Conklin talk more about this in a little bit. They had a backlog funding subcommittee assembled and they had multiple meetings. And what we did was, and they came up with a recommendation, what we did was, TICBAC came into the orbit of the budget committee officially. So we're the ones that do the annual agenda for them, as we saw in our minutes, and we have a much closer relationship with TICBAC than we did. And so that was not, at the time the motion was made in July, that had not yet happened. And so now as we go forward, we have kind of the motion, but also we have this other relationship that we need to honor as well in terms of how we're going to work with TICBAC. So at our November 12th meeting, Judge Moorman and I and the staff invited Judge Conklin and Ms. Fleming to kind of present as an educational session, just kind of what the TIC-TAC recommendation was. And we also invited Mr. Chatters and Ms. Flenner to present on kind of a model that small courts had. Meetings, and so we wanted to get a kind of more full presentation about that. We got that on November 12th, and they had a slightly different approach to allocating the second 25 million. And then, as I've told you, we then basically told the courts we need to get all your data on backlog by December 15th, so that Mr. Ouyang's shop could start processing that. And as you saw in the reports generated, Ms. Rose, Goodwin, and others have put that into displays and analyzed that for us. We're going to hear from them in just a minute. And Ms. Olvera. So that's kind of a basic background of where we are. And then what we're going to do now is, just to kind of signpost this meeting a little bit, is I'm going to ask staff to start presenting what these findings are from the data that we got from the courts using the TIC-TAC definition. And then we are going to, as a committee, vote at the end, get a motion to vote on which kind of a model we think is the most appropriate going forward. I mean, understanding, as we sit here, that both models are very well done. Both models provide data-driven approaches. Both models are fair. The difference is they kind of have slightly different policy approaches or policy emphasis. So let's, with that, turn it over. First, we need to go to the, I'm going to put Judge Conklin on the spot, and let's talk about the second item in that motion. So the first was the 25 million was allocated, but the second part of that motion was about precise definitions and reporting and documenting our backlogs. And Judge Conklin, what can you tell us?
Thanks very much, Judge Rubin, and all members of JBBC. Rebecca Fleming is on with us, and as usual, she's the one that did all the work and deserves all the credit, and I want to thank her very much for that. But it was a team effort, as she states. So I guess to summarize, if that's what you're asking for, Judge Rubin, the TIC-TAC recommendation, you're right. We originally recommended that the entire $50 million go out on, I guess, what would be described as a pro rata basis. And appropriately, the council, through a motion, I think, from Judge Rubin, said, let's split that up. The first 25 goes out pro rata, but the second needs to be more focused on an actual numbers-driven approach, given backlog and the definition of COVID workload backlog. And I think that's set forth in the report. I won't repeat it for you. If you have questions, obviously, myself or Rebecca is probably the more appropriate one to answer that. Immediately before the TIC-TAC meeting, Mr. Chatters approached us and submitted through public comment a proposal from what we loosely describe as a 30 or 31 small courts. Judge Rubin has noted they're both well thought, well reasoned proposals. I guess if I was to describe the difference between the two, it would be that the TIC-TAC proposal tends to tack away from a pro rata approach, and the small court proposal tends to tack closer to a pro rata approach. And that, you've seen all the numbers, but I think the numbers provided by the TIC-TAC model try to keep the distribution of the remaining 25 million to a more precise and strict need definition of COVID workload backlog. Rebecca, I don't know if you want to add to that about any of those definitions, or Judge Rubin, if you want more from that.
I was going to jump in and maybe hand it off to Ms. Olvera, but I think asking on behalf of the committee with respect to the second part of the motion that there were going to be precise definitions and practices for documenting reporting the COVID backlog, and I'm taking that happened.
Yes. And that, right. I think they're both, I think Lee is probably the best one to address that, but that happened and that was then used to make the form come up with a recommendation. So yes, that was accomplished.
Not to be too linear, as I say to the litigants that appear in front of me, you're in front of the most linear thinking judge here, so indulge me. So let's just tackle that piece first. And let me ask Ms. Rose Goodwin and Ms. Olvera, did you want to speak to that specific issue first?
Brandy, do you want to start off?
I was going to ask you the same question, Leah. So in regard, Judge Rubin and members, we look at the definition. Judge, that's where you wanted to start, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the way that the definition has been recommended by TCBAC is defined as dispositions will be used to identify the COVID-19 backlog, and dispositions are defined as the termination of a proceeding, whether before or after a trial or other non-trial event. The judicial branch will measure the COVID-19 backlog using the net change in average dispositions from the pre-pandemic period, which is March 1, 2019 to August 31, 2019, and compare that six-month period to the pandemic period, March 1, 2020 through August 31, 2020. And this is used via information that's reported in the Judicial Branch Statistical Information System, or GPSIS. And this is the information that was collected and put together by Leah's team and then weighted per the Resource Assessment Study, or RAS, for the model that we'll be talking about today. Does that help?
It greatly. That's outstanding. Ms. Rose Goodwin, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would only add that, you know, it feels like a long time has passed since we started these conversations. And I think that, you know, that naturally, as we continue to talk about COVID and how it has impacted the courts, that at the time that seemed like the most reachable or hospitable way to approach this data request, that the committee had considered many other means of evaluating a backlog, but they would have been weighed down with very onerous data collection. And so dispositions at the time seemed like the most straightforward manner to address the issue. As we move forward, and I think this is also in the recommendations, the committee did contemplate other ways that COVID would be impacting court operations. And it could be that in the future, we may evolve or change the way that we describe the backlog that is created in the courts. But this was the approach, and I have some slides that I'll go into later to talk about that data collection.
This, correct me if I'm wrong, the more time I've had to live with this definition, the more elegant it appears. In other words, it really has to do double duty. It has to help us on the allocation side of the house, but it has to help the Chief and Martin on the appropriation side and advocacy. So if you look at it from that perspective, like it's got to do these two things, it's one thing to say County A has 10,000 cases and County B has 10,000 cases, and so those two counties are the same. But at least with this, that doesn't tell us much. But with this way of approaching it, we're actually looking at the weights of these cases. Like having 1,000 traffic cases and 9,000 asbestos complex cases is different than having 1,000 complex cases and 9,000, the other way around. And this, the more you work with this, or I work with it, given where I was in, you know, statistics and calculus, it just seemed like it was a more elegant, it was a pretty elegant actual metric to come up with. Am I missing that, or is that right?
I would agree, and I think, you know, you're going to see in the attachments, I'll point out some examples of, you know, just on the raw data the unweighted data doesn't tell the full story, and you're exactly right. And if you think about actions that courts were able to take or could take over the last few months, they really vary. So I through the data, you can see that some courts, were able to process their backlog of traffic cases, and it appears through the data that other courts weren't able to take that approach. This methodology acknowledges those different approaches that courts took and weights them so that the workload is quantified in a uniform fashion. So every court is, is credited for the workload that they were able to do.
Great, outstanding. Any questions for Ms. Rose Goodwin? Or you can raise your hands, I can see you. Great, all right, see none. All right, so it seems like that's handled. And then moving on then to our third item, again, back to chair and the vice chair of TICBAC. So TICBAC is supposed to gather data on the spending of the first $25 million and then compile that into a report. And is that ready to go?
Yes, I believe that's been collected as well. I'm sure. I just want to confirm that through Leah, Brandy, or Rebecca. But yes, how the first 25 went out has been provided by all the courts.
Okay. All right. Does anybody want to know if we need any more discussion about that? But does anybody want have a question or any further? All right. Then that takes us to the kind of, I guess, the last issue, which is the models themselves and the reports. There are two really fine reports in our materials. All I had a chance to look at and review. And what I thought I would do is do it this way. Let me invite the staff to talk about the two different models from kind of a high level version. And then let me ask after that for Judge Conklin and Mr. Chatters if they have kind of comments or thoughts, and then we can have kind of a more open discussion among ourselves in motion after that. Does that sound acceptable to everybody? Forward? Sounds efficient? You can head nod too, because I can see that. Garrett, there you go. All right. Great. All right, with that, let me open this up to staff, and that's Ms. Rose Goodwin, Ms. Olvera, Ms. Cowan, everyone who'd like to kind of take the lead on
this. So, Judge, I might suggest, if I could, that since the data is the disposition data that we collected informs both models, that maybe I start with a quick run through
all right,
that data to kind of prime you for the discussion about the two models. Would that be all right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to put, I have just a couple of slides, just five, but sometimes I feel like that's a little bit more effective than just hearing me say things. So if you'll give me just a minute, I'll put my slide deck up and walk through the data collection that we did. All right. All right, can everybody see the slide that I've got up?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Terrific. So just to start off, we've already established that the initial charge of TICBAC was to establish this definition for the COVID-related backlog. And the specific measuring parameters was the difference in dispositions from the time period March 1, 2019 to August 31st, 2019, compared to the pandemic period March 1st, 2020 to August 31st, 2020, and that the dispositions were to be weighted. So we commenced this data collection in early November, and we have courts are at various levels of capability when it comes to data reporting. Most of our data that we utilize for the court statistics report and for our workload models is the data that's submitted via GPSIS or the web portal. So we utilize those options as well as templates for courts that were unable to submit their data electronically. There were about five different paths we had to create for courts to report their data. So December 15th was a hard deadline for us in order to be ready for this meeting and do our analysis in time for this meeting. We told courts that we could accept any data submitted through December 15th, but that was the absolute last day. And indeed, the following day on December 16th, we took a snapshot of the data that we had collected through GPSIS, and that formed the basis of our data set for this project. So all told, we needed to have over 15,000 data elements collected for this work. That's 264 data elements from each court. Courts report their data to us monthly, so part of the reason why it's such a large number is that we are collecting this monthly data, and we collect it in about 20 different categories. There are about 20 different weights that are used in our workload model, and so we needed to have the data at that level of detail to match up with our case weights. And we received 98% of the data elements that we needed for this project. So I really want to say that courts and the GPSIS data contacts worked really hard to get this data done in time. They took it very seriously, and I think that is a extremely positive result. I think there had been some concerns when we first started at TICBAC, you know, wondering whether or not courts would be able to fulfill the request. And I think that I could say that they came through with flying colors. So TICBAC, you know, thinking about what I just said, TICBAC was concerned that there might be some courts unable to submit the data in time. And so one of the recommendations that TICBAC made was to create proxies or have proxies available that would be based on statewide averages for those courts that were not able to submit data. And we ended up creating proxies for seven courts. Typically, the courts that had some issues with disposition data have recently transitioned to a new case management system. And because dispositions can span, you know, many months and sometimes years, when you move to a new case management system, you have to match up the data from the old case management system to the new one, and that can create some issues with disposition reporting. So Glenn is one of the courts that is finding itself in this situation, and so we did have to create proxies for all of their data. For the other courts, they were missing data for a particular case type and or period of time. And for the last three courts listed here, I think we may have had just a glitch where the court didn't realize that they had missed a month of data. And given our hard stop deadline, we ended up creating proxies for those courts for those missing months. So just a little bit about the disposition data that was collected, and this corresponds to pages 11, 12, 13 and 14 of your materials. Statewide dispositions between the two time periods were down about 49%, with most courts in the 30 to 50% range. And then because our dispositions are weighted, when we apply those weights, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in the next slide, the weighted dispositions are down about 40%. So said another way, that means that during the pandemic period, courts disposed about half of the caseload that they normally would dispose if you can call the 2019 period the normal period. And for those who may not be familiar or just want a quick refresher on weighting, here's an example of how weights are applied. So we use the measures from the Resource Assessment Study, or RAS. They are typically applied to filings, and it's used in the workload formula, the methodology that's used to allocate funding to the courts. And the weights are established through a time study, which measures the total amount of time that's needed to move a case from filing to disposition, and including any post-disposition activity. So an infractions case takes about 22 minutes of staff time, all told. Now that, again, it's not time from the moment the court case opens to closing. It's counting all the time that the case is being actively worked on. So if you sum up all of those small increments of time when the case is being actively worked on, for staff, it would be 22 minutes for the infractions case. For a probate matter, for conservatorship matter, it's 2,225 minutes. So if you were to multiply 100 dispositions by the infractions case weight, you'd end up with about 2,000 weighted minutes. And for probate, because it takes much more time and resources, you'd end up with a much larger number of minutes. So we applied these weights to all of the disposition data that we received and came up with each court's weighted dispositions. And those are the data for the courts are reported on pages 13 and 14 of your materials. So that concludes the information I had on the dispositions. Are there any questions about the data?
Is there any questions for Ms. Rose Goodwin about the data? Thank you, Ms. Rose. That was a great explanation, by the way. Very easy to follow. Any questions? You can raise your hand. All right, seeing none. All right. And then we're going to turn it over now to Ms. Oliveira to talk a little bit more about the reports.
Yeah, thank you, Judge. So as previously mentioned by Judge Rubin, $25 million was allocated to the trial courts at the beginning of the fiscal year, and this information has been provided in both of the reports as we look at both models presenting to you today. Beginning with the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee, or TCBAC, recommended model, the report starts at page 5 of your materials. Much of the report is a carryover from the November Budget Committee meeting, with the data additions beginning on page 8. So in this chart, you will see the first $25 million allocated by court, and then the second $25 million as recommended by TCBAC, with the total $50 million allocation included for this one-time funding. The detail behind the second $25 million begins on page 11 of the materials. First, there's a visual representation of dispositions for the two periods previously described, 6 months from 2019 pre-pandemic, and then 6 months of the pandemic period. The information here is by number of dispositions only, has not yet been weighted, but shows that there is a $1.4 million or 49.1% disposition decline. So as Leah mentioned, the disposition information for each of the two periods was converted into minutes. It was then weighted by case type to identify the change in backlog minutes. And this is reflected on pages 13 and 14. This model then takes the change in backlog minutes by court to determine each court's percent of change, and then allocates the remaining $25 million proportionally. So that's TCBAC's recommendation in a nutshell. I can pause here to see if there's any questions before I move on to the alternative model.
I have a quick question, which maybe I should have asked Ms. Rose Goodwin, or even Mr. Ouyang, who I see is here. So we're using, for both models, use the same data set. And the data set is built around a period in 2019 and a period in 2020 that match up. And I think it's reasonable to expect either somebody listening or somebody at the council meeting in a couple of weeks would ask, are we satisfied statistically that the 2019 period that we picked is reasonably representative? Maybe that's Ms. Rose Goodwin's question.
Sure. So, you know, we look at our data sets year upon year after year, and I would say that the year-to-year change is relatively consistent. And one of the things I think that helps make this model even more valuable or valid is that the committee opted to pick the exact same month periods as prior. So even if there is a seasonality in the data set, which we sometimes see, particularly with like traffic infractions, they tend to spike in the summer and then go down. So it's really important to match those months up. And so the committee's approach by, you know, making sure that you're comparing March to March and June to June is, you know, does help increase the validity of the model. There haven't been any major changes in the law that would affect the difference between 2019 and 2020. You know, for those of you who were here when Prop 47 took effect, we saw a huge change in our criminal data. There was nothing like that in this period between 2019 and 2020 that would change the results considerably.
All right, thank you. Thank you. Any other questions on the recommendation that TICFAC brought to us? Anybody raise your hands? Okay. I'm seeing none. All right, Ms. Olvera, if you can talk to us a little bit about the other model.
Absolutely. So the alternative methodology begins on page 15 of the materials. And this model was first introduced by Mr. Jake Chatters at the last budget committee meeting. This model, as mentioned, uses the same weighted disposition data as the TICFAC recommended model. This model establishes conceptual thresholds, placing courts under various impact levels from minimal to severe impact. And then the model references the first $25 million received by courts to determine the outcome of the second $25 million allocation recommendation. So page 17 provides a similar chart as the first report in showing what courts received in the first $25 million allocation, the second $25 million is recommended, and then what the total $50 million would be. So the detail behind the $25 million, the second 25, is on page 20 of your materials and includes each court's percentage change as the threshold in column Y. It's followed by each court's impact, outcome, and then calculations in reaching the second $25 million allocation by court. So finally, there's a threshold table that provides information explaining what the different thresholds and impacts are, and that's detailed at the bottom of page 21 for reference. So, any questions there? All right.
I'm sorry, I was muted. I was saying, any questions for Ms. Olvera there on the second model? All right, let me I guess turn it over then to Judge, I'm not seeing any hands up. Let me turn it over then to Judge Conklin, who just disappeared on me.
I'm here.
Are you there?
I am.
Okay, well, I don't see you. Oh, there you are.
It's probably a good thing.
Let me turn it over. You've heard the, did you want to add anything? I know we had a pretty good meeting back in November, pretty in depth. You've heard the latest presentations. Did you have anything you wanted to add or other observations?
You know, just very briefly, once again, to probably repeat myself, but to state the appreciation of Rebecca and Brandy and Leah and Rob and the staff. I think if there is a bright spot that comes out of this, it's the data. And we're now, I think, on a much more effective track to obtain and use that data for future purposes, both allocation and advocacy. So I think that's, if we want to make lemonade out of lemons, that's a good thing. Again, I jumped the gun a little bit earlier in describing the two approaches, but I'll repeat once again, I think, and if you look at the two tables, I think it bears out the TICFAC recommendation at page 8. You'll notice that the first 25 and the second 25, there appears to be some differences between the two. And I think that reflects that the second 25 million is focused on those courts with the most significant workload backlog. if you look at the small courts, the recommendation on page 17, those columns appear to be very, very similar. So when my comment earlier about the TICBAC recommendation tacking away from pro rata and the small court allocation tacking towards pro rata was not a criticism of either or to advocate for either, but just an observation of the different impacts of both. I would, and Judge Rubin made this clear, but in talking to CEOs throughout the state, there's obviously different opinions, but the prevailing request is that this committee pick one of the two today so that the council 2 weeks from now can make the allocation, because now we're halfway through the fiscal year. And I know this is a little bit of getting down into the weeds, but Judge Rubin set forth earlier about the different scenario or the different perspectives we take, and we're almost looking backwards now. We're looking at the second half of the 2020-2021 fiscal year and trying to get that money out to the courts so they can use it. And any further delay would be almost counterproductive. So that's sort of the one strong request I'd make between the two. Obviously, I think the TICBAC recommendation was well thought out, was I think a little more consistent with what the initial motion intended to address, but both have merits. And I want to thank Jake and the work that Jake did and Kim did, Kim Flenner, and their small courts. This isn't a competition, folks, and I don't view it as such. It was well intended. I just think those are the differences between the two. And I'm happy to take any questions on that.
All right. And maybe we have a question from Justice Fujisaki. Go ahead.
So maybe I should have spoke up a little sooner than this, but so I'm looking at the chart on the alternative methodology, and you know, there's that one column that talks about impact and has severe, moderate, severe, severe, significant. Could I have some explanation on that? And is there a disagreement in terms of the characterization of the impact that's charted here?
Jake is on. I think that's a particular definition through the small court model as far as severe and uh-huh. the different courts. You know, I think as we look back on this, everybody's severe, but I don't know, Jake, if you wanted to.
Let me do this. I see Ms. Flenner is also here. Why don't we do this? Can we defer that question, Justice Fujisaki, until I've given Mr. Chatters and Ms. Flenner the same opportunity as. What I was going to do is let them talk first and then open up to questions to everybody.
Oh, okay.
But far be it from me, your trial judge, to tell the justice, can't ask a question. All right, so let me then. Wait a second, Judge Hopp.
Okay, there's nothing like the delay between getting recognized and trying to unclick the mute thing. Judge Conklin, I had a question. Is there a difference in how you mentioned that the CEOs want to get the money as soon as possible? It's certainly understandable. Is there a difference if the council were to approve one approach or the other and how quickly the money would get out to the trial courts?
No, I don't believe so. Perhaps Rebecca or Leah can address that, but I don't think the differing methodologies impact the timing of the distribution. I think it would be approved. The data's in to support both. I think it would go out on the same timeline.
Let me just do one thing. Let me hear from Mr. Chatters and Ms. Flenner, and then we'll go to open it up to questions and comments. So I see Mr. Chatters, I see Ms. Flenner. Let me open it up to them. Kind of the same question to you two. You've heard the presentation. We had a great in-depth presentation from you back in November. You've heard today's presentation. Any thoughts or comments before I open it up to questions from everybody?
This is Jake Chatters. I don't know that I have a whole lot to add. I will address the question about the indication of impact. On page 16 of 21 in the packet, which I think is the PDF, you know, at the top it talks about what these thresholds are. And that is really the policy difference between the two allocation methods you have in front of you. you know, as Judge Conklin explained, the tickback model really looks at each court getting a certain dollar amount, for lack of a better term, but a certain dollar amount per minute of backlogged cases. And that's the same dollar, you know, for each minute or, you know, anyway, our weighted caseload. You know, the difference, and there's certainly some history of us doing similar things like that. That's how we allocate initial allocations. And if the, from a policy perspective, the view is that, you know, each backlogged minute is the same across the state, then that is certainly a method to use. The other model is looking at defining where there is an impact from COVID. Because a lot of the questions were statements where we didn't want to allocate this money that was specific for COVID to courts that didn't have an impact. So these thresholds were developed, you know, under the concept that our workload-based funding model looks at a three-year average of workload. It is a way for us to equitably distribute money. And to say, well, to the extent that there is a impact in these courts from COVID, then using that historic method of workload allocation still seems justified in that, yes, there is an impact, and that's how this threshold exists. So it defines them here as minimal, meaning that there is a, you know, very minor impact in terms of their reduction, and they wouldn't get any funding of the second 25, and then that increases. So certainly without having the data in advance, we didn't know where courts would fall, but as you mentioned, almost all courts have had a severe impact as defined by this chart and these thresholds of more than 25% reduction as measured in the model of dispositions. So that's really what this is doing. It's saying, well, those courts that have a significant impact from COVID then use the traditional three-year average workload model to say this is sort of the amount of work and money we would typically provide to them, and that gets provided. So it is closer to the first 25 than I expected. There are far more courts in the severe category than I think I had guessed there was. I thought there would be more in the significant impact or moderate impact, but that is not the case. And in fact, we are all very, with very minor exceptions, severely impacted by COVID. And even with all the mitigation efforts every one of us have implemented, that is the current situation. So, you know, that's the difference here. I would say it, again, relies on the three-year historical amount of work coming in. Yes, as an allocation, once it is shown that courts have an impact from COVID. So I think, as Judge Conklin mentioned, you know, certainly from my perspective as a court exec, the models in the end, you know, by and large, result in pretty similar allocations. There's some wide swing, some pretty broad swings, but you know, for many courts, the differences aren't substantial. And really, at this point, knowing what the allocation is going to be is important, so we can start, you know, addressing the workload and get the money out. So, you know, that's kind of the comment I would put there. The only other data element I would just point to is the difference between the two models, or an example of the difference. If you look at San Bernardino and San Francisco, and if you look on page, sorry, I'm scrolling up here, apologies, on page 4, labeled 14, I think it's page 15 of the PDF. I have to go one page higher, page 13. Both of those courts have, you know, a 41.1% decline in dispositions for San Bernardino, and in San Francisco, a 41.2%. So pretty similar. But between the two models, when you compare to their historic level of funding based on 3 years average, the two models go differently. San Francisco would get roughly the same amount that they got out of the first 25 million, which is based on the 3 years, and San Bernardino would as well. And using the tickback model, San Bernardino actually ends up with about $300,000 more than they would receive under the other model, and San Francisco receives about $200,000 less. So there are differences, and again, that's because it's looking at each minute is measured the same and on this particular model and doesn't necessarily use a three-year average. So anyway, but regardless, it's a policy call, and however it turns out here, appreciate the time and energy put in by staff, by all of you, and also by the council, and just look forward to being able to start addressing the backlog as best we can.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chatters. Let me now open it up to questions by anybody, or comments, motions, what have you. Justice Hill's got his hand. Go ahead.
Great, thank you, David. And Jake, thank you for all your work, and John, thank you as well. I, you know, looking through all of this, obviously it was, I think it's apparent to all of us that a lot of work went into this. There's no easy answer. You know, it'd be easier if something jumped right off the page and told us this was the perfect thing to do. But I think in the aggregate, at least from my perspective, and I thought I would just kick it off with a motion, and then obviously we can discuss it. But looking at overall equity, overall fairness, with an overlay of what the legislative intent is in terms of how are we distributing this money, what is it for, I think that the tickback method hews a little bit closer to that approach, and at least with an eye to the future in getting additional funds from the legislature, I think it would be helpful to at least align ourselves with the legislative intent as much as possible. And for that reason, I would move that we proceed with the tickback recommendation and do it as expeditiously as we can. And that would be a motion.
I'll second. This is Judge Mormon.
All right, we have a motion from Justice Hill, second from Judge Mormon. And Judge Hopp, go ahead, discussion.
This is a comment, but I'd like someone to confirm that my impression is correct. It appears from the data that we were right to think that simply awarding the $50 million, or allocating the $50 million pro rata the way we did every other dollar, wouldn't have been in line with what the legislature had in mind, which I think was to get more money to the more impacted courts. But I'd really like it if somebody would confirm that my impression is correct.
Yes, that would be Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic.
Good afternoon, members. This is John Wardlaw. I'm having some trouble with the camera here. But with respect to the legislature and their intent, it's very clear to us that their intent was to identify statewide what is the backlog, where are those backlogs, and how could we, through the use of this $50 million, help those folks that are out there that are waiting to have service by the courts. And so I think that the methodology that both models utilize does do that. It looks at what is the need out there. Just as Judge Conklin and Jake Chatters have identified, there is a policy call within that one model based on clearly on the data and looking at that backlog on a percentage basis, tick back moves the money in that direction. The small court model, as you saw, has a different nuance in that it builds thresholds in which Jake has described most courts would fall into the severe category. I think from a legislature standpoint, they would look at this and say either model, the branch has done a good job at looking and understanding what they're based on time to disposition as a measure to allocate the funds. I don't think we would have legislative scrutiny either way.
Thank you, Mr. Wardlaw. Any other questions, comments?
David, this is Todd. I just have one question for Jake, maybe, or Kim. I was just looking at the minimal and moderate numbers, and like, for example, Shasta. Shasta would get more under your model than they would under the tickback model, but they were moderate because of the threshold. Is that why that is?
Sorry, this is Jake. So yes, so basically because it goes back to that historic funding model of 3 years, Shasta gets a reduced amount from their from that, but they, you know, again, it's not treating each disposition as a dollar amount. So they still get a little bit less than they would have out of the first $25 million, but it isn't to the same degree as under the tickback model or tickback
recommendation. Okay, I wanted to make sure I was reading that right. Thank you, Jake.
Right, other questions or comments? Yes, Judge Warman.
I think I have my microphone fixed. So I just want to say thank you, not just to Tickback, but to Jake and the alternative proposal, because I think both of these proposals are allowing us to make the best possible decision. And, you know, I'm in favor of adopting the recommendation that's coming from Tickback, because I do think it meets the expectation of the legislature for us to have precise definitions to be able to identify those counties where the impact from COVID has been the greatest, because I think we all agree everybody's been impacted. It's just not everybody's been impacted the same, however. That's just a fundamental fact. But the two approaches, I think, are getting us to the best place. And I really, again, I just want to thank the thought and the effort and the time that was put into developing the alternative proposal as well as the Tickback proposal. And thanks to staff for putting them in a way that was understandable even before the meeting started. So that was great. But I really, you know, I took notes, a lot of notes from our November meeting and the last council meeting. And really the aims and objectives, in addition to getting the money out as quickly as possible, because everybody knows it's harder to spend it before June 30th with every passing day. But our goals and objectives were to be, you know, to devise an allocation method that was data driven with precise definitions that could be explained and understood, and get the money to where, you know, those areas that are more ravaged than some others. And I think the Tickback recommendation accomplishes those things. But my thinking was really benefited by the alternative proposal. And I just want to have that stated. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Moorman. Any more comments? I guess I just had a couple of comments to maybe I'll be able to call for a vote. The first one was, for anyone listening, I understand, and with all respect to the PJs and the CEOs, I understand that there's a perceived pressure that we're kind of late in the, if you will, in the kind of halfway through the fiscal year, and so we need to kind of get on this and get a vote going. As chair of this committee, let me just say this. I appreciate the pressure, but the committee cannot act unless it has all the data and information it needs. And there are going to be times when, as much pressure as people want to put on us, we as a committee just won't feel we have the data and information we need to make an informed decision to the council. In this particular instance, we're not in that situation. Because of the indulgence of Judge Conklin and the staff and Ms. Flunner and Mr. Chatters, who came to us in November, and they're back here today, and the staff getting out these reports, I think we have adequate data and information. And so I just wanted to be clear that that requires adequate data, which we have in this instance, to address that issue. I think Judge Moorman probably, I looked at this a lot. I've talked with staff and Judge Conklin and Mr. Chatters, and over the last, between the last meeting and this, and have gone kind of, have done as deep a dive. And I think at the end of the day, I think Judge Moorman probably encapsulates the stated my thoughts really closely. The one thing the budget committee typically is, we say a lot in our meetings, is we're not being asked to make a good choice, we're being asked to make the least bad choice. But this is not that case. We have two really decent, good, anchored, data anchored models, and we get to pick from among the best. And that's not something we get every day, at least not on the budget committee. And so having said that, though, I do agree with the vice chair. I think that encapsulates my thoughts. Well, there's a motion and a second. I guess I don't see a lot more discussion. I'm going to call for a vote then. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? All right, it passes. I did want to loop back, and I want to thank again Mr. Judge Conklin, Mr. Chatters, Ms. Flenner, and all the staff for all the really hard work we put you through to get this teed up for today. And again, thanks to all the orcs who really, when you hear Ms. Rose Goodman talk about the data, the way it came in, what condition it was in, that was very impressive effort by our branch colleagues. Thank you. I wanted to loop back, and I'll just be candid. I'm not sure we need a motion because I don't think the original council motion required it. But I want to be clear that when we do our report to the council, we being the budget committee, that we have reviewed and seen TICFAC's work on the definitions, on the data gathering, on and we are accepting those as they've been presented. Is that a fair statement? I guess I could turn it into a motion, but on for items B, you know, the motion had the first $25 million goes out in July, and then we had the other three parts. We've taken care of the fourth part. I guess I could put it as a motion to accept the TICFAC's work on items B and C of the motion, of the original motion in July.
It's Judge Mormon, so moved.
All right. And is there a second? I'll second. Great. Thanks. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? All right, that passes. I'm not sure you need a motion, but belt and suspenders. All right, I think with that, if it's all right then with, let me ask Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic, Mr. Oyoung, Ms. Olvera, Ms. Rose Goodwin, if there's anything you want to bring up for the good of the order as we go forward. Okay.
Can I? Just real quick.
Oh, I didn't mention your name, but yes, Judge Conklin.
That's okay. Just, this is a new start for TICFAC coming now into JBBC, and I look very forward to continuing down this path with a great committee and what I consider to be a good group of friends. Thank you all very much for this work, and look forward to the future.
Right. So, yes, thank you for that. And thank you for reminding me to kind of make a bigger deal out of that than maybe I did at the outset. So this does begin a new chapter for us as of September. It's no mystery that Judge Conklin and I know each other, we talk to each other, and so we've had communication, but that will obviously, with the new structure, be more formalized. We'll be inviting Judge Conklin to come to each of our meetings to kind of check in with us and just tell us what the lay of the land looks like, and hopefully he'll invite us to his meeting, and so we'll be able to kind of share with the TICFAC members kind of what we do, and that our perspective is a little bit different, but great. So yes, we look forward to a long and productive relationship. All right, anything else for the good of the order? All right, then I don't think I need a motion. Judge Rubin and I will be working with staff, probably mostly me, but I'll certainly make sure Judge Rubin sees it first as our vice chair, just to get our report put together to present to the council at its next meeting. And then, does anybody want me to do it differently? Okay. Thank you, everybody, for your confidence. So we'll take care of that. And then with that, I guess I'm going to adjourn the meeting. I want to thank all of you for coming back for another year with the budget committee. Obviously, we're to get much more deeply steeped in the allocation side, not just the appropriation side. The allocation side is going to be a lot more work, but it'll be exciting. And as Mr. Theodorovic intimated, we don't really know what the future holds, but we're going to be pretty busy. All right. With that, any other comments? We are in adjournment. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.